Hey friends, welcome back to the Collective's Conversations podcast, where we're having conversations at the intersection of faith and life. Today, we have the honor of welcoming Southeastern University President Dr. Kent Engel to the show. What a great conversation we sit down and have about just his story of calling, his idea of framework leadership, which is going to be so critical to you and just kind of how you maybe even create a framework for your own life, and the importance of Christian higher education. You guys know I'm a Lee University graduate, but Dr. Engel talks about how important Christian higher ed is now in our culture and our day. So you're going to love this conversation. So let's not delay and get right to it. Here's our conversation. Friends, welcome back to the Collective's Conversations podcast. It is a real honor of mine to have Dr. Kent Engel, the president of Southeastern University in Lakeland, Florida. Along with leading the university, Dr. Engel is the host of the Framework Leadership podcast, helping leaders with lessons they can use today. He also has a book title by this book titled by the same, Framework Leadership. Welcome to the show, Dr. Engel.
Hey, thank you. It's just a privilege to be on your show and to have this conversation.
Well, I appreciate you taking time. I know you're very busy. I want to get first things first out of the way. So I did a little digging and know you lived in Northern Illinois for a little while. So I got to ask, are you a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan?
Well, I'm a big American League fan. So obviously that would be the White Sox. Although you can't deny the Cubs, you know, rich heritage, and I probably went to more Cubs games than I did White Sox games, but yeah, that I love them both. But I am American League mostly.
Okay. I grew up in Chicago. Grew up a huge Cubs fan, is why I ask. And so, I feel like a lot of people became Cubs fans in 2016 when they won the World Series. But I endured some of those really bad years, probably games you went to when nobody was there. So
I actually was at the Cubs game when the infamous outfield interruption. I can't remember his name. You know, he interfered with the play
Bartman.
That would have yes, Bartman. Thank you. There you go. I was at that game that night.
No way. That's fantastic.
And I'll never forget that and how the fans erupted after that. And of course, we know the result. They didn't end up going to the World Series.
Yeah, it was crazy. Well, before you led the university and you were even pastoring churches, you were a news sports anchor out in LA, I believe, right?
Yes. Yeah. Finished my career there.
Who was maybe your favorite athlete you got to interview during that time?
Oh my goodness. That, you know, that's a difficult question to answer. It's like, who's your favorite child? I had the opportunity to interview so many remarkable, and covering so many different, professional sports teams and athletes. I would say, and I mean, you know, I interviewed Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Muhammad Ali. I would have to say probably my favorite was Muhammad Ali. I think for me, just the awe of who he was and what he accomplished. And then, of course, having to face what he had to face with the physical issues. And he was just so lighthearted and fun. I really enjoyed that interview. So, yeah, I would have to say probably my favorite of all time was Muhammad Ali.
Was he as big in real life as he comes off in sort of the interviews?
Absolutely. I mean, the moment he walks into a room, I mean, it just fills the room with his presence. And I think a lot of that is, again, who he was and what he accomplished, the stature of all of that, and just you know, a huge symbol in the nation on a variety of things. So not just what he did from an athletic sense, but, you know, always fighting, you know, civil rights, those kinds of things. So, yeah, it was pretty cool to be with
him. So it seems like an unlikely journey then to go from interviewing Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan and all those athletes to being president of a Christian university. So give us just the short version of that road. How did you go from news sportscaster to president of in higher ed?
Yeah. Well, I actually, I can go back to my high school days when I graduated from high school in Bakersfield, California. I had no idea what I wanted to do in life, and I did have several passions. And I had a great mentor in high school. In fact, he was my pastor at the local church that we attended. And he spent time with me. I'd go down and be with him one day a week, and he would mentor me on leadership. And he told me, he said, Kenzie, he said, if you'll follow your passions and you are always aware of your gifts and your talents and the experiences that you're going through, start pursuing those. And when you do, opportunities will open up. And that's exactly what happened throughout my entire career early on in television sports. I just, you know, actually didn't know again where I wanted to go to college or what I wanted to study for sure. So I just enrolled in classes at the local community college that helped me to fulfill some of my passion. And passion, one of them was communication and broadcasting. And so I was taking a class. It was actually on broadcast writing, and I was taking a class at the local community college, and news director was the professor of the local news director of the NBC affiliate was the professor. And he said, I tell you, Ken, I'd love to have you as an intern at the station. And of course I jumped at that. And again, it was following a passion and was there about 3 months, and I shadowed the sports anchor, and he took another job up in San Francisco. And I'm 18, and 18-year-olds think they, you know, pretty much have it all figured out.
Yeah, I was 18 once too.
And of course, we learn differently as we grow. And but I went in there with great courage and said, I think I can do this job. And the news director said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a chance at it to audition, and you can produce a show right on the set. And I did. He hired me on the job, and I started anchoring weekend sports at NBC at age of 18.
Wow.
And then continued for the next 10 years, finishing in LA. But again, it's all about following passion. And then, you know, I also believe that if you've built a system in your life to recognize those things, you'll be able to understand where to go, the next step, what opportunity may come. And I also look at catalytic events in my life, and that sometimes changes. Because of those circumstances will change passion, and it did 10 years, you know, into a career that I thought I would be for the rest of my life. But through certain circumstances, the Lord, you know, opened up opportunity to step into ministry leadership. And we went to a northwest suburb of Los Angeles and put together a team and planted a brand new church there. Mm-hmm. and actually pastored that for the next 10 years. And then went to pastor a church in, as you mentioned earlier, in Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. We pastored there for about 5 years. And before then, I got a call to see if we'd be interested, if I'd be interested in serving as the dean of the College of Theology at Northwest University in Seattle, Washington. And again, it was cultivating a passion just to develop leaders, especially ministry leaders, church leaders. And I thought, wow, you know, I've been able to do that in the local church, but I could exponentially invest in a generation of leaders for churches for a long time to come. So that's kind of how all of that evolved. It was never, you know, I want to be a university president, or I want to be a dean, or, you know, it didn't start out that way. It was just simply following passion, my experiences and gifts, and so forth.
So you talked about catalytic events. Can you maybe describe one or two of those that kind of set the course to where you are today? Something that maybe our listeners would go, hey, that's an event that I've had in my life, or a similar event?
Yeah, I mean, the one that really was significant in my life in terms of affecting going into ministry leadership, it was an event that was more of a tragic event in my family. I had just lost my father to a massive heart attack. He was only 43 years of age. My closest, you know, my father, but a great best friend that I lean on a lot, and it was tough for me. But he was a great spiritual leader in my life too, helping me develop my walk with Christ. So that was hard. And then just a short time later, 3 years later, my sister and her husband, serving as youth pastors at a church in Southwest Missouri, They had just dropped off their youth group and were headed home, and a drunk driver hit them head on and killed them both instantly. And it's just through those circumstances, God spoke to me about what I felt he wanted me to do now in my life, and that was to go in and invest in people and develop their lives from a spiritual sense, holistic sense. And I just felt that call to go into ministry leadership. And then, as God always does in my life, he always brings confirmation to what I'm feeling and sensing. And you know, I've started getting calls. You know, in fact, I got a call from one pastor who actually went on to be the general superintendent of the Assemblies of God, George Wood. He was my pastor in college. And he said, "Ken, I think God's dealing with you about going into ministry, hasn't he?" And I go, "How'd you know all of that?" And, you know, I just receive these confirmations, and it allows me to step into what's next.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I also come up with kind of a framework of how to discover your design so that you can walk in those. That has always given me, you know, a way to know what is next and what are the opportunities that God may have.
And your book and your podcast is called Framework Leadership. Help us understand kind of a little bit, maybe a snapshot of what that framework looks like. I know even at 46 and three quarters here I'm sitting, I'm always thinking about where God's leading me, whether it's where I'm at, whether it's what's next, or whatever he has. How do we have a framework to know where God's leading in our divine design?
Yeah. Well, I use a specific framework, and I'll touch on that, but I also use what I would call more of a self-reflecting framework. So self-awareness, self-management, experiential awareness is always important to me to make sure I'm doing that on a daily basis, in the sense of, and I choose to do it through journaling, you know, what's going on in my life in terms of self-awareness. What are my gifts? What are my, you know, because I'm a firm believer God can change gifts based on how he wants to use you and make a difference. So I have to make sure that I keep a way to discover those gifts and know that I'm on target. Look at people that have come into my life. I look at experiences, good, bad, difficult, spiritual. What are they saying to me? And that helps me to kind of begin to discover what's next. In divine design is all about discovering the way God made you, wired you, equipped you so that he can use you. So that's the process you want to make sure. So self-awareness is definitely part of that. Self-management, making sure you're disciplined holistically, physically, mental, spiritual, all of that. It's all about balance in life, and then just looking at those other things. But an actual specific framework that I use, it's a four-step process, and framework leadership kind of walks through that. It's first thing is simply listen. Do everything you can to listen intently, listen well. Listen to things that are going on, to people, to all, you know, you just have this aspect that I want to posture myself to listen for learning. Then I always go through clarifying the context, in the sense of understanding the contextual awareness. What's going on in my circumstances, in my current job? You know, you kind of assess the context, whatever you're doing or leading. So that helps you to kind of know what's next. Then I move into what is clarifying the goals. So when I feel like I've discovered certain goals, then I want to clarify. That's where you take what you've listened to, what you've discovered in the context, and you translate it in a way that you can live it out. And then the final step is aligning vision. Everything is in place. Opportunities are there. And you step into those, and that's, you know, can affect the design that God has for you. And I guarantee you, when you walk through those kinds of framework steps, you're going to be on target. And I've also believed, you know, when you serve God, you can't miss God's will, because you're trying to serve him. And if you do veer off a little bit, God's going to make sure he gets you back where you need to be. And that's why a system helps you to make sure you are aware of that. So yeah, that's kind of a nutshell of it.
I had a pastor say when I was a college student, he said, God's will is hard to miss. It's kind of like the Grand Canyon. You're going to just kind of fall into it a lot of times. It's just that
big
for us.
That's great. I love that.
So in And obviously your role as a president of a higher ed institution working with college students, how is this sort of framework maybe assimilated or put into practice there? Because college students are always asking these questions, like, what am I supposed to do? We know college students are like 70% of college students change their major after they go to school. Like just yeah. these really like they're always searching. So how is that maybe a Southeastern being put into practice to help students really understand the direction of God in their life?
Yeah, well, we've actually developed a course and we create in the curriculum of every single major. We call it Divine Design Credits. And we teach the process of how to discover your divine design. And so I've actually written this adventure called Life, which kind of unlocks what that means in divine design. They incorporate that. Also wrote a book on nine disciplines of enduring leadership, which also focuses on helping you to understand God's design for your life. So we build it in with the students. And in fact, our mission at Southeastern University is we help students discover and develop their divine design so they can serve Christ and the world through spirit-empowered life, learning, and leadership. So it's very much a part of our daily DNA because we do. We want ultimately students to really learn how to discover because it's a lifetime adventure. It's not just a one-time decision. Oh, that's it. And no, God again will want to bring new experiences, new opportunities because he wants to use you in significant ways. And you need to be able to know that, discern that, discover that. And so we teach this framework that you can utilize for the rest of your life. And I mean, I'm still utilizing it. So you never retire from the way God wants to use you. After all, he did create you and brought you into this world in a pretty significant way. So yeah, that's how we kind of make it practical here at Southeastern University.
That's great. I love that at Southeastern, everything, we talked that I was looking at Southeastern for maybe my doctoral work, but it's everywhere. This idea of divine design is, the vision is so clearly communicated, so evident that when you are a student at Southeastern, or if you're looking to be a student at Southeastern, it's pretty clear this is the direction and the vision you have for the institution, and this is going to be the discovery process you walk on. So for parents who maybe, and I'm going to shift gears a little bit, because you have this heart for college students, you worked there, you wrote a book called The Modern Guide to College. Maybe for parents who have students who are getting ready to attend college like I do, or one that is attending college, how important is it right now for students to be looking to go to Christian higher ed institutions? How important is that in the culture we're in right now?
Well, first and foremost, especially in our current cultural context, you know, education was designed to point people to truth. And faith-based education is absolutely to point people to the ultimate truth. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, the life, and discovering that truth is so important to us. And so education should be doing that. What we're dealing with now is really a battle of the mind and heart, especially in educational institutions that have no faith component whatsoever. You know, they actually are creating an ideology that wants to take you away from truth. And they want to define truth. And of course the big term out there now is wokeism, and it's truth that's anti. I mean, you're now looking at a curriculum that starts in kindergarten in public school that, you know, starts to tell you, you know what, they're basically anti-divine design. There is no specific design for your life. You can be anything you want. You should choose if you want to be this or be that. And so that's why faith-based education is so important in a person's life to really expose them to truth, real truth that can actually change and affect their lives. So that's why I'm a big proponent of faith-based education and really begin growing in a way, because ultimately education, when you think about it, is helping you to be your best self. If you can know your calling, then you want to be your best in that calling. So, for example, when I left television sports, I mean, my undergrad degree was in broadcast journalism, and now I'm a pastor leading a church. I need more education so that I can be the best pastor I can be. Mm-hmm. And that's why I went back, looked for a program, and Vanguard University in Southern California actually started this brand new master's in theological studies that focused on probably the three most important aspects of leading as a pastor, and that's having a good, solid understanding of the biblical studies, scripture, having a good understanding of church history, and then having great practical theology poured into your life. So those components would help me to be a great pastor. I want to be a good steward of my design. So that's why education is so important. I don't think you can be a good steward without it. There's formal education and non-formal, so to speak.
Right.
But the bottom line, everybody needs education.
Yeah. So how are you then, you're a doctor, you have your doctorate. How are you personally continuing your education as an individual now? How are you growing and what are you doing now at this level?
Yeah, well, what's wonderful is I have a chance, because I'm at a university, to be able to be shaped by amazing minds, from our professors that I learn from here in many, many ways. Also, I think it comes through, taking time to learn, discover, read, that you kind of build that into your discipline. I call it, and I talk about, I have a whole chapter devoted to it, the discipline of learning, in my 9 disciplines of enduring leadership, where you have to just kind of build in a discipline to help you make sure you're learning, things that you pour into your mind and your heart to help you to be sharp, to stay strong, constantly doing that in my life. So that's kind of how I keep making sure that I'm on top of things. I'm at the point now, I'm not pursuing a formal education, as in another degree, because I've reached a terminal degree, but I don't stop learning. And that just is a discipline in my life.
And I feel like you host a podcast and I host a podcast, and I've said this before, I do this very selfishly. I mean, people listen to the podcast, but it's really a selfish thing so I can sit down with people like you and learn. And you do kind of the same thing with some great guests at the Framework Leadership Podcast. It's almost like a cheat code to go like, it's like something we do, but it's really just selfishly, like, I get to learn while helping, share this with other people. So that's one of the reasons I do this, but thank you for being a teacher in this setting.
Thank you.
So Southeastern's had really some incredible growth over the last several years. You guys are super innovative. What do you think has been sort of the catalyst behind Southeastern taking off and some of the innovation you guys are doing?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We prioritize innovation. We live on, if you know anything about the sigmoid curve, it's an organizational dynamic that helps you understand that you have to, the sigmoid curve is all about the beginning of an organization, the journey, the climb, initial success. Then you have a lot of inflection points along the curve, like challenges, difficulties. Mm-hmm. COVID would be an inflection point that happened for college universities. And you have to, how do I create a new curve? And the way I always frame it, how do I build a map to a place I've never been before? So whether you're a person or you're an organization, that's your question. Because if you're going to grow and transform, you have to be building a map to places you've never been. And so we're all about the innovative map. How do we create, design, discover new ways to deliver education? And something that's very important to us is, creating access, because I believe everybody should have access to education. Not everybody, as I mentioned earlier, not everybody may want a degree per se, but they do need education. So are we providing all levels of access, from certification to to actual, you know, like an AA or a BA or grad programs, you know, those kinds of things. The other thing is affordability. I believe it's the responsibility of university presidents to lead and drive down costs. And so we talk about the menu of affordability. So our big growth came in taking, I call it taking scholarship to the streets. Instead of expecting students to come and live on a traditional premier campus where you would experience, you know, not just the curricular life, but you're going to experience co-curricular, you know, from chapels to sporting events, to things like that. And of course you have room and board. So there's a cost to that. And anytime you go to a traditional campus, it is going to be expensive and especially now we're living with significant inflation. And so we looked at a way that we could drive down the cost, and that would go into communities across the nation, partner with faith-based churches, faith-based businesses, and say, what are the educational needs? How can we provide those degrees for you? And the way we do it is create affordability. We actually can slice the cost of that delivery by 2/3 of what it would be on a traditional campus. So you are more than able to be on the road to graduating debt-free when you attend one of our extension campuses. And we have 200 across the nation. We also have now overseas in Brazil, Argentina, Uganda, Moldova, and we just continue to expand. And then we create experiential education. We want people, as they're learning it in the classroom, to actually get out in the field and do it. And so we design that. We design practicums in all of the delivery formats where you're actually doing it while you're learning. So I think those things have served to create the kind of transformational growth that we have had, the significant growth we've grown probably in the last 10 years, over 290%, which is huge. Wow. and unheard of in higher ed today. So we're grateful for that.
These extension campuses, probably the biggest risk you could take as a college to not have them come to campus. How did you guys navigate the risk reward on making that decision? Because I know near us, we have like the Belonging Co. has a campus.
Yes.
And then there's some others that have campuses not far from where I'm at. It seems like a big kind of risk reward kind of like conversation. How did you guys as an institution go, it's okay to not have them here?
Again, because of our framing process of listening and auditing the context and clarifying and aligning, we realize that for faith-based universities, which most faith-based universities are enrollment driven, we depend on enrollment. We don't have significant endowments but even some of the schools now that have these significant endowments, a lot of them are restricted and you really can't utilize them for operations. And we simply said we have to diversify the model. We have to diversify the portfolio of what we do. And universities that don't do that, that they don't create new streams of enrollment, which will produce new streams of revenue, they're going to start closing down. And sadly, you know, it's once a week I hear of another faith-based university closing down because all they did was focus on their traditional. And you can't just focus on one delivery system. So, yeah, it may take away from because people want to choose to go to a site rather than come to the main campus. But that's okay because we have so many different types of deliveries. It's still keeping a great stream of enrollment and revenue that keeps us alive and keeps us being able to offer faith-based education. So it was almost like we have to do this. It's should we do this or is it? No, we need to do that. So that's why we committed to the path starting. It was around 2014 when we started.
Yeah. And you said you guys prioritize innovation. So Is there anything on the horizon for yourself professionally or for the Southeastern that you're really excited about innovation and seeing come to light?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, two things that we're heavily involved in now in terms of expanding the menu that really excited about is creating, we call it SU Trades. We're going into the trade industry because right now that's a significant workforce issue. Yeah. So, project management, we're looking at all different HVAC, electrical, all these different trades. You know, it's always been usually left up to the community college to do those kinds of things. Why can't a university tackle it in the sense of, and especially faith-based, to build in a faith component in your community in terms of certifying and creating opportunities for trades, those who want to go into that field and are needed in that field. So we're heavily now investing in what we call SU Trades, and it has been a significant delivery system. Our community is going crazy over here in Lakeland. And of course, we can transfer this to our sites across the nation. That's a significant piece. Then when it comes to, AI, obviously, that's a new horizon. We're actually developing, because we're seeing the need for it, we're developing an AI K-12 online experience that is going to be pretty amazing, that will have the classical, traditional, faith-based education. So many people are now turning to like a homeschool network, or they're looking for curriculum like that, because obviously the public school and what they're doing and teaching and, the philosophy now that's out there, which is a battle against the very truth of what God's word declares. And so we want to create that in a pretty significant way. And so we're just on the verge of developing that can be put across the nation as well for parents to provide. So that's an exciting adventure. And then, of course, we're just always expanding. We just went into Argentina. What's an interesting story about that? In fact, I'm meeting with their representative today from Argentina here on campus at Southeastern. But it was about 2 years ago, the president of Argentina decided they wanted to have an evangelical university in the country of Argentina, and they don't have one. And so we were contacted about being that possible provider. And so just last fall, it passed their Congress, if you will, and the president announced this new initiative of an evangelical faith-based university there in Argentina. So we're on the ground floor of building that network there. So those are the kinds of things that are happening that are exciting, and again, just helping us to fulfill our mission.
Yeah. I mean, you can't spend 2 or 3 minutes with you or read or hear anything you do and not know you're passionate about leadership. Leadership kind of oozes out of you. Why is it so critical right now for us to develop this next generation of leaders, especially in higher ed and in the church?
Yeah. Well, if we don't invest in the next generation, then we don't have a future. And that's why it's so important. We need to start developing leaders for the future. We want to see for our children, grandchildren, generations to come. And one of the best things we can do is to provide that next generation with hands-on mentoring, educational experiences, so they can lead and ignite and influence culture and be salt and light, as the scripture talks about, in our communities. And I have this passion for leadership and developing the next generation because of people who poured into my life. Mm-hmm. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I had a mentor who not only taught me what it is to be a leader, but he just demonstrated it. He brought me alongside him in his everyday life to show me what leadership looked like. And I think too often we hold on to the baton too long, and we don't take the time to hand it off and teach the next generation, and provide full opportunities for them to kind of achieve their full potential and how God wants to use them. And so, I think that's why I'm so passionate about it. And of course, the reward is immense when you see these amazing young students go out and become solutions to issues and challenges and people groups in our world. It's great.
Yeah. My mentor, who was mentored by his mentor, he said to me, one point, he sat me down, I was probably 21, 22 years old, and he said, these six words from Jesus that sort of set the framework for how I think about mentorship. He said, freely you have received, freely give. Yes. And the responsibility was that after he poured into me, I had to pour into somebody else. And what I've found challenging, I think, is those who've not had someone pour into them don't always understand the value of mentorship. How can we address maybe someone who's not been mentored and help them become a mentor?
Yeah, I think just the fact that you will take time and spend time with people automatically awakens that desire for mm-hmm. them to do the same. So I think the more you intentionally look for people that you believe need to have that passion awaken and just come alongside them. And pretty soon they're going to sense, wow, this is a great value to me. And so, yeah, I encourage, and I still do it today. I have mentors in my life that I seek. I also, want reverse mentoring as well. I want younger people than me to kind of mentor me and those kinds of things. So I just think you model it, you invest in this whole concept and encourage others as much as you can to realize what it can do for your life. That's why we teach that whole process of mentoring here at Southeastern and build it into a curriculum and so forth so that they will be awakened to make sure they continue to go on and invest in people's lives.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Engel, I really appreciate your time. It's been so valuable. I got one final question that I ask all my guests, and I know you're busy, you have things to do there at Southeastern. Since the show is titled The Collective's Conversation, who is one person, either historical, present day, fictional, or someone in your real life that you would like to sit down and have a conversation with?
Wow. Again, there's so many I would love to, from scripture, obviously. But one of the areas I'm passionate about is political leadership, having a chance to be involved and create influence with the ability to lead communities and across the nation in ways that make them healthy, strong, and serve. So I've always loved politics, and one former president that I've studied and would have loved to have sat down. I actually met him, and I'm talking about Ronald Reagan, our 40th president. Actually met him when I was actually anchoring in Springfield, Missouri. I had a short stint in Springfield working there at NBC. And he came to town during, I think he was campaigning for Senator Kit Bond, who was the Missouri senator at the time, and had a chance to meet him, but of course didn't have a chance to really talk to him. Right. And I just loved his leadership style. He was so relational. And if you study, he was always full of humor to, disarm, all the political, right. stuff that happens. And he was engaging. And people, that's why they called him the great communicator, because of his relational engagement. And I would just love to sit down and just hear from him, how did he learn that? And who were the people that invested in his life that gave him, of course, he was an actor and all of those things. And mm-hmm. that plays into skill sets and so forth. But if I had a chance, I would love to be able to do that.
That's a great answer. Dr. Engel, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to sit down with us. And as we always say here at the Collective's Conversation, you've got a seat at the table.
Ah, thank you. Privilege.
Thanks. Wow, what a great conversation that was. Thanks for joining us in the conversation. If something from the conversation really stood out to you, would you share it and tag me on social media at Jeff_Pitts_ on Instagram? And we would love it if you would rate and review and subscribe to the show. That just helps us reach more people with these great conversations. And as we always say, you've got a seat at the table. Thanks for joining the conversation.